God is spirit, and there is no other. All is spirit. There is no place where one can go where spirit is not there. And there's no one to go there, for only spirit is. And every time we violate the oneness of spirit and have a material idea or thought or belief or concept or aim or target or goal or wish or desire, we have separated ourself from ourself. And in that moment we have lost that which the boy of 18 knew. And with that knowledge that only spirit is, he rewrote the Bible. He literally rewrote the Old Testament. His New Testament was the testament that spirit is all there is. And that spirit I am. Now, it is not necessary for us to go around declaring, I am. That would be a hollow shell unless it were backed by the consciousness of the silent years of preparation. Though it be the truth, it must be experienced for it to have the power expressing through you. Now, your silent years might be just 4 hours one afternoon, but those would be 4 hours well spent, in which you relive the 18-year-old mind which knew that only spirit is, and that the spiritual universe is one continuous, unlimited, infinite substance out of which all that appears has grown. And when you hear the word atoms, molecules, electrons, you can smile and say yes. That's the first imitation in an imitation mind about the spiritual universe that I live in. And that imitation is the beginning of the good and evil of this world. Never did the spirit make atoms, nor does the spirit protect atoms, nor is the spirit in any way dependent upon the activity of atoms. And as long as I take myself to be a body of atoms, I am taking myself out of the reality of my spiritual self. There was no body of atoms buried in a tomb that walked out again. There was pure spiritual form. A spiritual form that we are to show forth on this earth. In the book of Revelation, a very unusual statement appears. I'd like to read it to you so that you can apply it to your life. This statement occurs in the 20th chapter of the Revelation of St. John, in the sixth verse of the 20th chapter. Blessed and holy is he that hath part in the first resurrection. On such the second death hath no power. But they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. When Jesus discovered that he had never been born because his name was Christ, Spirit, that he had only one father, Spirit, that his mother and father had never been born, for they had only one father, Spirit, he had overcome the first death, what we have called birth, is the first death. The death to spirit becomes human birth. And when Jesus later said, the last enemy to be overcome shall be death, he was referring to that death to spirit which we call birth. The birth of a person is the last enemy to be overcome. For there is no birth of a person, there is the appearance of a form made of atoms, where actually all that exists is the invisible Christ self. This first death, or birth as we know it humanly, must be overcome, and that is the meaning of blessed and holy is he that hath part in the first resurrection. Now, when you have overcome the belief in birth, it is because you know yourself to be that spirit without beginning or end, which can never be born and can never die. And you cannot do that with your human mind. You can only do it when you have, in some way, touched the Christ mind. For the Christ mind has already overcome the belief in this first birth, or first death. So your first resurrection is when you touch the Christ mind and live in it consciously. And then because of it, you become spiritually aware, Christ aware, aware of yourself, and that is attaining life before death. Now, what we call death is here called in this book of Revelation the second death. It's our first death, but it's the second death because birth was our first death and we didn't know it. So birth is the first death, and death is the second death. But if you have a spiritual realization of self, which is the first resurrection, dissolving the belief that you began at the date of human birth, then on such the second death hath no power. And the reason it hath no power is because when physical death comes to such a one, he already is living in his spiritual selfhood, independent of the physical form, and the physical form is but a servant of the spiritual consciousness. This is the reason Jesus walked back after he had been crucified. He had actually died, you see, to the flesh 3 years before the crucifixion. There was no physical Jesus to be crucified. He had gone through the first resurrection. He had annihilated the belief in human birth. He walked and lived and had his being in the Christ mind. And then when death, humanly, or the second death came, there was nobody there to die. This is the path that every man on earth will follow. We will die before we die so that we cannot die. We will go through the first resurrection. And such cannot be touched by the second death. But they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. That is the meaning of that revelation. And because it is the way of the way shower, whose way we are to follow, there is nothing that we can do to change that path. Each of us in turn will come to a moment when we will go through the realization of spiritual selfhood, which is first resurrection, which is not a baptism in the water, but a baptism of the inner spirit. And that is the truer meaning of redemption. And from that moment on, we are priests of God in Christ. We are the living church of God on earth. The Spirit of God is our being. And the death that comes to the physical form does not find a consciousness that can receive it and accept it and be hypnotized into believing that it is real. You will go through this because it is the will of the Father that ye be perfect and go through the first resurrection, which makes you a priest of God in Christ. Now, when we are fully convinced of this, we're willing to lay aside some of the human baubles that take up our time. Whereas many things of this world intrigue us, because we see nothing beyond them, when that something inside begins tugging at us, when the sense of reality of spirit within us begins to nudge us more often, then we can see through the outer shells of form and conditions and threats. We can see through the world situations and the something inside us that has been tugging says through us to the world, "Thou couldst have no power over me. I'm not a material form. I'm not something that you can hit with a crowbar or shoot with a bullet. I am that Spirit of Christ which walked through the world and out and came back in a form just to show that the whole world of matter is nothing to me." We feel that invisible Christ within ourselves. And the more often we feel it, and more convinced we are of its presence, the more hollow the glories of the world appear. Until finally, we have one desire. To shuffle off the belief in mortality. And to live in the reality of our being. Without opposites, without ups and downs, without ins and outs, without hot and cold, without dying so that we can reincarnate back to the usual sufferings. We begin to see our life as the fullness of God expressing. We know we have caught something that the little boy of 18 knew. We know we can sense what was running through Peter when he went out to heal. What was running through Paul when all of the earthly powers in this world meant nothing to him. When nothing could stop him from going about his Father's business. We recognize that my Father's business is my business, and I have no other business. We couldn't have done this when we were too much of this world. There was too much living to do. But then every now and then, we look at those who went before us and see all of the living that they had to do. One man had to build a savings and loan empire. That was a great deal of living. And in his early 50s, he found he didn't have the empire, and not long thereafter, he wasn't around. Another man is a movie idol, and then he's not around. Another is a great singer, and then she's not around. They lived. Was it worth it? What would they give to know that they didn't live? They were going through the imitation of life, thinking that the counterfeit was real. Something in a person tells him that the counterfeit is no longer for me. It may glisten and gleam like gold, but somehow it cannot satisfy. No one can tell you that. Only the Christ within can make you know it. And there's no need to hurry it up or to be impatient until that inner something tells you that you no longer want the counterfeits. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't hasten the process. You can't climb into heaven by sheer will and determination. It has to be because something inside you is a spiritual expression demanding recognition. And then the outer mind, which would have been very happy with the comforts of this world, is dehypnotized from its belief that this world is real. And you begin to look through the things around you, touching the hem of the robe of reality instead of the outskirts of false concept. To the average person, a good marriage, 3 children, a good job, a nice home in the country, regular vacations, paid up insurance, and enough Blue Cross for emergencies looks like about all they want. Just think if the 18-year-old boy was out for that. We'd still be back in the Old Testament. We almost are anyway. We'd know nothing, nothing of perfection which is present everywhere we walk. We'd know nothing of one power which never bows to any other power on earth. We'd know nothing about what happens to us when we lay down this mortal body. We wouldn't even know why we were here now. We'd all have opinions about it, but none of us would really know. Now we know. We're here to be the living Christ of God. We're here to be here forever. And we're here to know the infinity of our being, so that we're not confined to a time and a place, nailed down to a spot. We're here to take dominion over the land, the sea, and the air. Not by taking human dominion, but by serving the Spirit. By serving the Spirit, we become the master and are no longer confined to unreality. Now, in your discovery that you can touch the Christ mind, you will open up like a blossom. Now, where are you going to go to touch that Christ mind? You can start by thinking in terms of, I'll touch the mind of Jesus Christ. And that may suffice for you. For when you touch it, it will be the Christ mind. And that would be one form of meditation to work with. Another would be, but isn't the Christ mind everywhere? Isn't it right where I am? Yes, it is. And therefore, right now, right here, at this moment, the Christ mind is right where you are. And the way you touch it is simply to accept that it is there. In that acceptance, the human mind is still. That Christ mind, which is right where you are, covers the universe. The universe is funneled right down to you. Do you believe that? If you do, there's nothing to do anymore but know it. And know that it is true for eternity. It has ever been true. And nothing can ever change it. The Christ mind can never go away. You don't have to pray to it. You don't have to ask it for a thing. It is infinity itself right at your doorstep. Open the door of your mind and be still and let infinity pour itself through that door and then behold it. There's nothing more to do except practice this until it's so natural that the infinite Christ mind is ever moving through the door of your consciousness. You live that way. And you behold Christ forms all around you. This is how we come to the first resurrection, the elimination of the first death. That preparation which eliminates the possibility of a second death and makes instead a transition. A transformation in which we walk out of the concept called physical form into the reality called spiritual form and take our rightful place in eternity. You can see that without this there is no continuity to life. It is but an abbreviation, a little parenthesis, an interlude without meaning. So these are the broader areas to work on. Several of us have sat down to try to relive the experience of the 18-year-old boy. And you find when you do that, that it's hard to get out of that. It's very enveloping. It does something for you very quickly. It puts the human mind to rest because the human mind is useless in this experience. And it opens you to your Christ mind. And then because you're open, the soul center is functioning. You are receiving the invisible word. You too are communing with those who have made their translation into pure spirit, out of form. You are going through your silent period. When I and the Father are one, And now all that the Father hath in sequence is flowing through me. The perfection of the Christ mind is doing all the work. If it must multiply loaves and fishes to feed multitudes, it will do it. If it sees a withered arm, it can straighten it. If it sees an insane person, it can restore sanity. There are no processes in the Christ mind's activity. What it actually does is simply reveal itself. And that appears as the harmony of food, sanity, wholeness. We're losing human identity this way, and we may rebel and recoil. But when did you ever have the opportunity to lose human identity before death? Up to now, you've had to lose human identity by death. Now you're anticipating. You're taking the bull by the horns. You're not waiting for death to rob you of human identity. You're doing it through your own volition, with a purpose, with the knowledge that it is the first resurrection. I recommend that you try a 4-hour stint at this. As an 18-year-old, named Jesus, sitting in silence, learning from the inner spirit the nature of identity, of truth, of being, of God, of spirit, of self, of light. And you will discover you learn more in those 4 hours than in all the books you've read. Now, to some measure, we have the Christ mind now. And you must learn patience. We all think that when we go into the silence and there's a contact, there ought to be some sort of a July 4th explosion, that the saints ought to start marching in. The air should be alive with cloven tongues and fire. Spirit works much more gently and much more silently than our human minds would like it to. Just this great oasis of silence is a building block. Spirit is building. Spirit is building far into time, far into space. And we will interpret it in time and space. But Spirit is ever building, ever expressing. And when your winter is over, the leaves will bear buds. Be sure it's happening invisibly when the silence is upon you, because the roots are then going deep. I've made a little discovery you might be interested in. You will find, if you use a Q-tip in your ears. For instance, when you take a shower, you might use a Q-tip and push it in your ears just to dry the inner side of your ear. You will find that if you do that, that when you are in spirit, the inside of your ears have opened up. You wouldn't know it except if you're using something in your ears as a regular habit. But the inside of your ears open up. The lobe actually inside just opens up, almost like a flower does, when you are in spirit. And I'm sure you'll find that it has something to do with improving your hearing, if that happens to be a factor in your life you're concerned about. In other words, when you're in spirit, there is some physiological response. And in this case, ears open up. Now, that is just the outer or the inner portion of the outer ear, but I'm quite sure that other factors in the ear are also responding. You will also find, and this has nothing to do with Q-tips, that your physical form is an empty shell. There's nothing in it. The mental images that you call organs and stomach, intestine, heart, lung, they're not there. They have been put there as images. And when they go wrong, they're only going wrong as images. You will find when you're in spirit, you have the whole feeling of the emptiness of this shell, and that you have the right and the power to put inside it anything you want. You can put inside it a perfect heart, and not one that is subject to matter, to time, to space. You can put in it harmony. And the way you do it, of course, is to catch that glimpse that mortal mind has placed in you forms that are not there. Even the outer shell is not there. And when you are in spirit, you can feel the infinite capacity of divine mind to place inside you and to alter in any way it sees fit the activity of those organs so that they are perfectly expressing the divine idea. You know then that nothing is impossible. It doesn't make any difference what an X-ray says, or a light or an electron microscope says. Always, that which is inside this form is the image of a cosmic mind, which is an imitation of the reality of the infinite mind. And so if it seems insurmountable to the doctor and to your human mind, remember, it is only that way to you. The Christ mind is not hypnotized by form. Rather, form must appear in the harmony of the Christ idea when you have released your human mind. Now, these little things will crop into your awareness at the right time, at the right place. And something in you which is concerned about a problem and says, I can't get rid of this, will suddenly think, well, what am I talking about? Of course I can't get rid of it. But why am I trying to get rid of it? This infinite Christ mind is the power. Why would I use a toothpick when I have a crowbar? Why would I use 1 watt to light a room when I have a dynamo here? Why do I rest in this limited, blinded, hypnotized, finite, mortal, unenduring human sense of mind when that which can see the universe at a glimpse, in one glance, is standing here waiting for me to say, you take over? And then nothing is impossible. Always, we can say to ourselves, this problem does not exist in God. This problem does not exist in Christ's mind. This problem does not exist in spirit. Therefore, this problem does not exist, because only spirit exists. And if there's something in you that can accept that, your problem is over, because you have just established that you are spirit, and spirit is never beholding to matter. Matter depends for its very existence on spirit. For when the spirit is released, that falseness of matter is overcome, and still a pure image comes forth in the material world, born of the spirit. Some will call it Jesus, although Jesus isn't there. Some will call it Buddha, although Buddha isn't there. Or Krishna, although Krishna isn't there. Only the spirit is there. And some will call it a human race, although the human race isn't there. Some will call it a baby. Some will call it a dying man. But always, that mind which was in Christ Jesus knows, it is not a baby. It is not a dying man. It is not a human race. It is not Jesus, Buddha, or Krishna. It is the spirit, invisible, present and perfect, misperceived through human minds. Have ye that mind that was in Christ Jesus, and let the Spirit then reveal itself through that mind as perfection, not only in form, but in activity. And then we have overcome the limitations of the physical form, the world of time, the world of space, the world that is a lie about the kingdom of spirit on earth. The allness of spirit is the release from the errors of material form. And because spirit alone exists, your knowledge of it is the only power you need. We may not have the intermission, I suppose I've gone over, but suppose we be still and feel our spirit, so that there's less of the human activity in us and more of the infinite itself. I will rest later as a child of 18. Learning what he learned, I will attune myself to his mind, knowing it is the Christ mind, and then again I will attune myself directly to the Christ mind, not thinking of Jesus at all. These things will I do until I know that the Christ mind is ever present where I stand. That I am but a little capsule within that Christ mind. And that when I am in the Christ mind, my true self is revealed. I will overcome the first death. I will experience the first resurrection. And I will live on earth in my true identity, beholding to no one. knowing that Spirit is all now, we are made whole by that Spirit. And that is the theme of today's class. So thank you very much.